But we begin today with something that when I tell you this, you're going to say, Amos, that isn't news. We already knew that. Well, we may have known it. You may have known it. But the larger community didn't know it. A report was released today by the Fair Housing Center of Central Indiana, revealing that 45 years after the passage of the Federal Fair Housing Act, racism, bias, discrimination still exists in renting apartments and houses in Indianapolis. This organization sent out testers. They sent out some whites and some blacks to the same place and out in the townships. We're not talking in the inner city. They went out in the townships. 80% of the time, the rental agents broke the law with the black folks. 80% of the time. Live in our studio is Amy Nelson. She's the executive director of the Fair Housing Center of Central Indiana. Amy, welcome.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, there are a lot of people listening going, this is not news. We already knew it. How important is this testing that you guys did, not only for race, but discrimination against people that had children, which is against the law, and discrimination against the handicapped?
It's very important. First of all, it's the first such study that's been done in Indianapolis, and we believe possibly in all of Indiana on this. Mm-hmm. We're actually a fairly new nonprofit agency. We opened our doors in January of 2012. And we wanted to look, hey, is housing discrimination occurring in our community? Right. And if it is, we wanted the numbers mm-hmm. as to what was happening. And what we found, you referenced one of them, what we found is that in areas that were 75% or more white, mm-hmm. specifically we tested with African Americans and Hispanics. We found that African Americans were discriminated against 83% of the time and Hispanics 70% of the time. We also did some other tests that were across the Indianapolis metro area regarding people with disabilities and families with minor children. Mm-hmm. And we found for people with disabilities who, for instance, needed what's called a reasonable accommodation to have an animal to help them with their disability. Mm-hmm. We found they were discriminated against 25% of the time. And as far as complexes being accessible to people with disabilities, as was required as of 1991, we found complexes were in violation 73% of the time. And then finally, families with minor children was our lowest number. We found that they were discriminated against 20% of the time.
Just on the race-based test, you went out to zip codes 46214, 2027, 37, 41, 17, 21, 34, 39, and that little strange zip code way up on the north side, 46280. So this was west and south and southwest and east. And these were apartment complexes mostly, correct?
They were all apartment complexes and larger complexes. We specifically, for this project, we wouldn't have had to, but we targeted larger complexes because we believe that those complexes really typically have fair housing policies in place. They send their staff to training. So what we found there would be the minimum amount because smaller housing providers tend to not know the law as much. So you tend to see higher levels of discrimination.
So these were not mom and pops.
They were not mom and pops.
These were major places.
Correct.
And I understand that you are finding the real dumb bias where the black person would go in, the black tester would go in, and we don't have much. We only got this one. And then a few minutes later, the white tester goes, hey, welcome. Come on in. That blatant?
4 units available, potentially. Let me give you an example of one of our tests, and this is outlined in the report as well as some of the others. We had an African-American tester go to a property. The agent meets with him, gives him a map, circles on the map where the apartment complex is because this is a huge apartment complex, gives him a key and says, go look at yourself. Mm-hmm. He goes, looks at it, comes back, and asks for how much is this going to cost? Right. She asked for his email address. He says, you know, I don't like to give that out, worried about spam. Mm-hmm. I can't give you a price then. The white tester shows up, gets driven up to that apartment complex that's for rent in the golf cart with the agent, is shown the amenities, talked about the property, mm-hmm. goes back to the office, is never asked for an email address, and is given price quotes for 3 different properties.
Oh.
That's just one of the examples in our tests mm-hmm. that we did.
In terms of, since this has not been done in Indianapolis, to your knowledge, by a fair housing organization, Obviously, fair housing centers have done this in other cities. How do we rank? Are we at the top of the list of high percentage of bias? Are we in the middle? Are we low? If we were doing this, if you were doing this in New York or Chicago or Birmingham, Alabama, would we have the same kinds of results?
Well, I've actually been working in fair housing for 16 years and was hired to actually start up the fair housing group here. For whatever reason, a nonprofit fair housing group never got up and running in Indiana. And that's somewhat of a surprise. Ohio has 7 groups, Michigan 5, and Illinois has 4.
Right.
And yet nothing got up and running in Indiana. It's always difficult to do state-by-state comparisons because local issues may change and demographics are different within that. But I know just on my personal experience and in visiting with my fellow colleagues, particularly in this area, this part of the country, unfortunately, it's probably not a huge surprise. These numbers are probably somewhat in a level with the states around us, at least.
Does this show a lack of training on the part of these apartment complex owners, that they're not bringing their employees in for training, that they're not doing their own secret testing, you know, to make sure that their company policies aren't being followed?
Well, there's a problem somewhere. I mean, the fact is that if you have a business, I have a business, you obviously have a business, you want to make sure you're following all the laws. You get your staff to training to ensure that they know about all those laws. There's obviously some breakdown here. We certainly feel education is certainly part of it, that we want to make sure people know their rights, responsibilities under law. I know in just being out in the community here in the last year that the Fair Housing Group is open, people don't know their rights and responsibilities under fair housing laws. People don't know they have been discriminated against or are currently being discriminated against. And on the provider side, I definitely feel there's a significant number of housing providers who want to do the right thing and don't know what the laws are. And then, of course, you do always have also some who purposely do not follow the law as well.
The law also means that you've got the prospective renter must be given the same everybody's got to be given the same information. It's got to be a level playing field.
Correct. And I should point out that tomorrow is actually the 45th anniversary of the passage of the Federal Fair Housing Act. So we're talking 45 years now. In 1968, the act was passed to include race, color, national origin, religion. So that's been on the books for 45 years. And then in the 70s, gender was added in, and in the 80s, families with minor children and people with disabilities. So 1988 was the last time the act was amended. So we're talking a lot of years now that the laws have been in place, and we're still seeing these type of problems. Whether you're a tester, Supreme Court has upheld. If you're a tester, you're still required to get the same sort of information as anybody else.
239-1310, 239-1310 is Afternoons with Amos. We're with Amy Nelson of the Fair Housing Center, and their report is available on their website at www.fhcci.org. That's www.fhcci.org. Let me go to Jeff. Hi, Jeff.
How you doing, Amos?
I'm fine.
And hello to your guest.
Yeah.
Have these groups, these facilities been notified of your findings, and what are the penalties and repercussions that's going to take place?
First of all, in regards to whether or not they've been notified, no, they haven't. We took out identifying information except for zip codes out of the report. Right now, those cases with our office are open, and we are reviewing what to do. Of course, our most important thing is to make sure the discriminatory practice gets stopped. Mm-hmm. How we go about doing that, we're still reviewing that.
Would that be something that you would take to the Indiana Civil Rights Commission, or the city has an equal opportunity office that really don't think does anything? There's maybe, you know, obviously there's a United States attorney that's here. Is that evaluating which route to go?
Correct. It could be basically anybody who feels they've been a victim of discrimination. Let's say here in Indianapolis has several different options. They could go to federal or state court. They could see if the U.S. Attorney's Office was interested in pursuing their case. They could file what's called an administrative complaint with the Indiana Civil Rights Commission. And those individuals could potentially also file with the county. The county doesn't have what's called a substantially equivalent law. Doesn't mean it's not worth anything, but it's not an equivalent law to the state law. But what is great about the county law is that it provides protection in areas that aren't protected under federal and state law. So that's an important point to make. But whether we choose to file with ICRC, court, U.S. Attorney's Office, DOJ is also, you know, an option with U.S. Attorney's Office. We're still evaluating that.
I appreciate it, Jeff. Let me go to Ramona at 239-1310. Hi there.
Hey, Amos, how are you?
Fine.
Yes, I have a question for your guest.
Uh-huh.
What I'd like to know, have they tried interracial, like white man and black woman, white woman and black man? And the reason I ask, they seem not to too much bother the white man if he has a black wife, more so than the African-American man married to a white woman.
Ooh, that's a great question. These testings were black. These weren't necessarily, well, the families had to be, they don't have to be a couple. These were not integrated testers, correct?
Correct. We didn't want to confuse basically the test results on that. And I can't tell you what we have or have not done as far as other forms of testing, because the important thing is we don't want our testers to be detected.
Mm-hmm.
Because if our testers can be detected, it's going to influence what those results are.
Right.
But certainly we're interested in, as our resources allow, determining levels of discrimination across many groups. There's groups that we haven't been able to do an effective. One that interests me in particular is when it comes to race and criminal history, mm-hmm. and race and the receipt of Section 8, for instance,
mm.
and whether or not there's differences there, for instance, as well as some other areas that we just weren't able to get into last year during this project.
I appreciate it, Ramona. We're talking with Amy Nelson. She's the executive director of the Fair Housing Center of Central Indiana. Mm-hmm. They released a report today that shows that there's discrimination, not both racially, discrimination against persons with children in rental properties, as well as discrimination against the handicapped. As I looked at the zip codes of the areas you tested, these are areas that are not 90% white. There are African Americans that live in those zip codes. You don't have any evidence yet to show that perhaps there were quotas in play. In other words, the apartment complex, well, we got one or two black tenants, that ought to cover us, and that's all we're going to allow.
That never came up. And we were targeting 75% or more white, was kind of the census mm-hmm. track information we were looking for. All I can say is what we found in the tests, and anything about any quota or anything like that didn't come up. It was those differences in the number of units that were available to them, the prices of those units, whether security deposit was based on credit or a set fee, and then the treatment during the rental appointment.
Let me go back to discrimination against families. Listeners may not realize that that is a protected class in terms of the ability to find a place to live, that a landlord cannot discriminate against a renter because they have children or they don't have children.
They're protected if they do have children. Not protected if they don't. Some states provide protection like that. Ours isn't one of them.
All right. But the landlord cannot say, well, you got kids, so you can't rent here.
Correct. Minor children are protected unless the property qualifies as housing for older persons. Mm-hmm. And they would have to be advertised in a certain way, have policies, et cetera. Otherwise, can't be denied unless they're exempt from fair housing laws in general, which there are some exemptions for 3 single-family homes or less or 4 units or less.
Mm-hmm.
There is that exemption in
place.
But
these were multifamily. These were a complex.
These were at least 100 units.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody we test was at least 100 units.
239-1310, 239-1310. It's Afternoons with Amos. What kind of reaction have you got? I know there's the Indianapolis Star. They've already posted a story. What kind of reaction have you gotten today?
We've gotten, a few emails in our office, a couple press inquiries, and, feedback from we have an e-newsletter list that a lot of people are on, and feedback from that to date. So far, the feedback has been mostly positive
mm-hmm.
about what we're doing in the community, and we really appreciate that.
In terms of with these results, I know there's an apartment association. There's an association of apartments. Will you be sitting down with them and saying, hey, here's what we found? I don't think you want to be an apartment association identified this way.
Absolutely. We hope this report spurs an open dialogue to discuss these issues. We're actually partnering with a number of different groups next week on a conference that we're holding, and a number of housing providers have registered for that, which we're very pleased about, that people want to attend those type of activities and get to know about laws. But we're interested in working with groups that are interested on these issues. Remember that all of us at one point are going to need fair housing laws. We're all going to, at some point, rent an apartment or buy a home or get a mortgage or get renters or homeowners insurance. So we need to remember fair housing laws protect us all. And we're all members of several different protected groups out there. And people forget that a lot of times.
I had a thought and I forgot to hold it. This is the age, slipping up. In terms of one of the things you found was their price steering. In other words, you know, a person comes into the leasing office, they start to talk. The leasing agent says, how much you're willing to spend? And the prospective renter says, I'm willing to spend, you know, $800. And they start showing them places higher than that. Was there price steering going on?
That did happen on a few tests. I wouldn't be able to estimate the numbers. And we tried to reference that within the report where people it's common in a test for the testers to be matched fairly similarly on everything except for what we're testing for. So, for instance, except on race. So they're going to be seeking the same number of bedrooms, right. The same prospective occupancy date, and in the same price range. And so if one tester, for instance, a black tester, gets told the only thing I have available is $950, which is $150 over the deposit or over their desired amount, and the white tester gets shown in the range, that's going to be discrimination for us.
Was there even instances of the black tester goes in, nothing available, and the white tester goes, hey, we got plenty of room?
Not that blatant. Not quite that vocal, but it certainly occurred on some tests where a tester showed up. Also on the Hispanic test, can't forget that because we saw a 70% number there too. Wait a minute.
The percentage against black was 82%. For Hispanic was only 70%.
Correct.
See, there's listeners that would have thought it would have flipped around, that the Hispanic would have been the higher percentage. And
honestly, that's what I thought.
I thought
that we would see probably the highest area would be on accessibility and on with Hispanic discrimination against Hispanics and Latinos.
Is one of the problems with accessibility the age of complexes, the older the apartment complex is in terms of age since it was constructed, the higher the chances they haven't been retrofitted to be handicap accessible?
Yes and no. Properties are exempt if they were built prior to 1991.
Okay.
So when the fair housing amendments took place back in 1988, Congress said, hey, all this property is getting built that's not accessible. And because of that, those with disabilities are getting segregated. Mm-hmm. And so they said, if you're 4 units or more, effective March 13th, 1991, you have to be accessible. So they had 3 years to kind of get to know the law. And then the law kicked in 1991. For this project, we specifically targeted properties that were said they were built in 2000 or later. So we didn't even go back to 91, 95.
So these are the property, apartment complexes, less than 10 to 12 years, 13 years old.
Correct. So they had a big buffer room past not only the 88 amendment announcement and then going into effect into 1991 and then up to 10 years or more later, the property actually being built. And those are the ones that we targeted for the testing. To answer your question, if you go back to those early 1990s, you probably will see a higher level of noncompliance. Mm-hmm. Because even though the architect groups, fair housing groups, HUD were all active, it wasn't getting corrected. But we're talking 20 years since, you know, it was put into effect, and we're still seeing this level of violation.
What hypothetically would happen if one of these complexes that committed one of these bias offenses, whether it was against families, whether it was against or based on race, whether it was against handicap, what would happen if they had Section 8 tenants there? Would that affect their ability or their license to accept Section 8?
if it depends. Mm-hmm. It would be something that could be raised, you know, with HUD. Section 8 in and of itself, because that is something that's mobile. Typically, right. The voucher is mobile with the individual. If it was a subsidized property, a project-based Project A property or Indianapolis Housing Authority-type property, you know, there would be potential additional concerns on how that complaint is filed and how it would be evaluated and reviewed. And then it's certainly on the follow-up compliance side.
What can the community do? What can listeners do to backstop this report?
Well, we need help in, and I'm sure when you talk with Indiana Civil Rights Commission, et cetera, we need help in getting the word out. Mm-hmm. And the more that's doing that, that's going to, you know, help us. You know, talk to your friends and family. Ask them, do they even know what fair housing laws are? Mm-hmm. If they aren't, our website has a lot of topic-specific fair housing information. We have a series of fact sheets on topic-specific issues that people can just grab and get to know. We certainly need help in having people apply to be testers, mm-hmm. So that we can do the tests that we need to be able to do and have the flexibility to help us uncover those incidents of discrimination.
Is there a particular things that people who are trying to rent apartments ought to know?
Well, one of the things that we saw in the report is that the types of discrimination that we uncovered were subtle forms of discrimination that would be difficult for somebody who was getting information to know that they were being discriminated against. You show up, you're told nothing is available. You walk away, hey, nothing was available. Mm-hmm. Not knowing that maybe that afternoon or whenever that tester went in, that they were told about four units. Mm-hmm. But certainly if something doesn't feel right, we certainly would like to hear about it because it might be something we would like to check out.
Let me go to Greg at 239-1310. Hi there.
How you doing today?
Fine.
I want to say I'm congratulating because I'm a bigger gentleman, and when y'all start doing anything with the handicap, making things bigger, that helps me out. A lot of these places had to make bigger bathrooms, bigger toilets, stuff like that. And for the bigger person, I call big people, real big people, handicapped too. And that really helped out. So I'm glad they do anything for the handicapped people or big people because they make everything for small people, like on an airplane or something like that. And it's hard for us bigger folks and handicapped people to get anywhere or sit anywhere. You know, so I'm all for anything that makes it handicap accessible for, you know, so everybody can participate or be wherever they need to be. That's all I wanted to say.
All right, I appreciate it. I got an email from Kim at praiseindy.com. She asked a couple questions. One I think Amy Nelson already answered. Are we able to access their study's results and the names of the complexes that discriminated against the people? The study is available on their website at www.fhcci.org.
Our news page.
On the news page. And I think we already talked about, is something going to be done? Yeah, that's coming down the road. And then Kim also asks, do we have to prove we were discriminated against? If so, how would we do that?
If you chose to go forward and file in a complaint, you would have to prove that you were discriminated against. Or as part of that complaint filing process, let's say, for instance, you filed your complaint with the Indiana Civil Rights Commission. They would conduct an investigation. And as part of that investigation, they would ask you, why do you feel you're discriminated against? They might also try to gather information on their own as well, mm-hmm. Separate from what you may or may not know what happened, and to determine whether or not discrimination did or did not occur. But in order to go forward with your complaint filing, whether that's in court or with ICRC, whomever it is, you do have to be able to have enough information to make an allegation.
All right. Again, it is a darning report. I was going to say something else, but this is the light. It's a darning report, but you know what I mean. The apartment complexes out in the townships were tested, and like Perry and Franklin and Decatur and Washington and Lawrence and Pike tested. And guess what? 80 of the blacks, they found discrimination against African-Americans 82% of the time, against Hispanics 70%, against persons with handicap in the 25%. Among families, what was that percentage?
It was 20 for families, and accessibility was 73%.
Ooh, accessibility, that's not good for a world-class city, Mayor. King George or whatever, Gregory or whatever your name is this week. If you want more information about the report, just go to www.fhcci.org. And you guys, Amy Nelson, have an event coming up next week.
We do.
Because it is Fair Housing Month, and we'll be talking on Friday during Amos and Abdul with the head of the Civil Rights Commission about a number of things, including this.
Jamal, his group is actually partnering. We're all partnering together as well with IHCDA and some disability organizations to host a Fair Housing Conference on April 18th. And it's a free event, but you do have to pre-register. But another thing that's happening during that day is we also have a civil rights photography exhibit going on. Mm-hmm. And I actually brought you some of the photographs. This was somebody who marched with Dr. Martin Luther King and photographed those pictures. And he was a former Catholic priest. His name is Bernie Kleina. And he went into fair housing, worked for 40 years in fair housing, retired recently, and now has put his photographs into an exhibit.
All right.
And is going to be there as well. You don't have to register for that portion. There'll be about 30 of his photos available.
And that's
going to
be down at the Government Center Conference Center next Thursday.
Mm-hmm.
All right. And you can find out more information about that also at the website.
You can.
Oh, he's even got a copy of the Selma newspaper from way back in the day.
That's him on the front page.
He was a young priest.
Right before the march.
All right, but
I think he'd be a great interview for you.
We're going to work on that. We're going to work on that for next week. Amy Nelson, the executive director of the Fair Housing Center of Central Indiana. It's a darning report. Got to do something about this. Thanks very much for being with us. Glad to have you.
Thank you.
Coming up in our second hour, the Chief of Police of Indianapolis Metropolitan Police Department, Chief Rick Height. Also, in a little bit, we will talk to the Reverend DeForest Soares, find out what's going on about. Oh, somebody just hit me with an email, Amy. They were asking, do we know whether any of those apartment communities got subsidies? Either through the city, metropolitan development, what is that, those community development block grants and any of that stuff? Do we know that?
We tried to target private properties as much as we could tell by how they were being advertised. We specifically didn't test tax credit properties or anything else. Now, they could get some form of CDBG fund that wasn't being advertised, but that wasn't something we specifically targeted.
All right. See, we're answering everybody's question. Amy Nelson, thanks very much for being with us.